Welcome to Safety Culture Excellence. This week's topic, are safety incentive programs effective? My name is Sean Galloway, and I'm proud to be your host. Greetings from East Brunswick, New Jersey. The use of incentives for safety is nothing new. A quick search yielded over 27,000 results. This week, Terry and I will initiate this topic that I'm sure will be continued over many, many podcasts. To begin, you will hear Terry talk about how safety incentive programs can be easily placed into three broad categories. If you're listening to this file through streaming media and would like to download it for later use, all files and other ideas to help you bring positive improvement to your safety culture can be found at safetyculturexcellence.com, or you can visit our consulting firm's website at proactsafety.com. So, Terry, the question that we're going to answer this week is actually a simple question, but I can already guess is going to have a very complicated response. The question was this: are safety incentive programs effective?
Yes, that is a very simple question with probably a fairly complex answer. I tend to think three different ways over here. I've seen many safety incentive programs. I've seen them vary tremendously in how they're done, how well they're done, how efficiently they are followed up on, and other issues out there. I see basically three kinds of these programs. One, there are some effective safety incentive programs, no doubt about that. There are some of them that that improve safety at the site. There are some ineffective safety programs, and I would call those basically the ones who don't impact safety one way or the other. They just come and go, and safety does what it's going to do, and those things never find a handle on it. They never really impact it one way or the other. There's a third category, though, too, and I don't know exactly the best term for this, but these are the ones that just go way out in left field. They're the ones that go off in a direction that was totally unintended. They're the ones that backfire, that explode, that blow up in your face, and really do some things that you didn't intend for them to do. And, you know, quite frankly, I see more of the ineffective ones and the left field ones than I do of the effective programs out there. Now, that's not saying that there's anything wrong with incentive programs inherently. I certainly have no philosophical problem with incentives. The philosophy of incentives is relatively sound in the behavioral sciences and psychology and sociology and performance management. You know, the principle is well grounded, and the problem is not in the theory, the problem is in the practice, because the practice of incentive programs is incredibly complex, and they can go wrong in a number of different ways. The most notorious way that incentive programs go wrong in safety is that rather than impacting the accidents themselves, they impact the reporting of the accidents. They foster a black market, if you will, of accidents. You know, you can't sell your accident on the legitimate market, so you go take care of it in the black market, you know. No one will come to the safety office to get a Band-Aid because you have to write it in the first aid log, so they all bring Band-Aids to work and share them with each other. You know, there are a number of things that happen. One of the things that I would recommend also, a lot of organizations have asked us, well, how do we know if our safety incentive program's working? How do we know if we have something in place in our organization that anything, in fact, incentives or others that are suppressing the reporting of accidents? And there's usually one telltale indicator that I would recommend that organizations take a look at, and that is the ratio of severe accidents to minor accidents. You know, or if you will, recordables to first aids, if you want to go to the OSHA terminology. One of the things that National Safety Council and several other organizations have some pretty good data from that's measured as test data from different organizations that tells you what the ratio is. Of course, you probably heard the national averages out there, the kind of 1 to 29 averages and some of the others that have come out of some of the national studies. You can get it industry specific, you can get it workplace specific, you can get it state specific, and a number of other things which narrows you down. But what happens if your accidents are not getting reported? The ones that are not getting reported are the minor ones. If you cut your finger at work, it's not that difficult to keep it in your pocket, go home, come back with a Band-Aid the next morning and say that it happened at home, working on the lawnmower last night or whatever. If you cut your hand off or break your arm at work, that's incredibly difficult to cover up at work unless you have a whole culture of conspiracy, which, believe it or not, still does exist out there in isolated pockets in the world. So what generally happens is your very serious accidents get reported and your minor ones don't, and so your ratio goes very much against the average. So if you find out, for instance, that your ratio of first aids to recordables is 1 in 20, 1 in 30, 1 in 50, whatever it is in your industry, and you find out yours is 1 in 3, you can be pretty sure that you're not that much better than industry average, that you're not having as many serious accidents as industry average, but 90% less, 90% fewer minor accidents. So that's one of the things that you ought to take a look at. Now, we're going to go in, I understand, in future series on this topic and talk about what makes some of them effective, what makes some of them ineffective, and what makes some of them blow up in your face and go off in left field. For the scope of this one thing that I would recommend that sounds so good on the surface, that's generally a very, very bad idea, and that is, let's ask the workers what they want. Let's put a team of workers together and design a new incentive program. And, there's so many things in safety that you want participation in, but participation in an incentive program is absolutely counterproductive unless that participation is very well educated in what makes these things work. What you're really asking, a lot of safety professionals said, well, I'm going to ask our workers what they think would be an effective incentive program. And what they basically ask their workers is, if I gave you something for free for safety, what would you like for me to give you? And so the workers don't choose an effective program, they choose a desirable reward. Or a desirable incentive out there. Well, I don't want hunting stuff. I want fishing stuff. Whatever it is that you're handing out to the workers, they choose that, and that is a part of it. If you think about it, an incentive has to incent, which means whatever you're giving away out there, if that's what your program does, and believe it or not, it's not necessarily money. It's not necessarily material goods. What you could be giving away is recognition. Or other intrinsic kind of rewards, but whatever it is has to incent, and if it doesn't, an incentive program's lost in the first place. You're trying to get people to do this. Now, there's a fellow named Alfie Cohn who wrote a book back in the late 90s called Punished by Rewards, and basically his conclusion was all incentive programs, all motivational programs, all reward programs are inherently evil, ineffective, duplicitous, unnecessary, insulting, and so throw them all away. And certainly in his work, he pointed out some systems that were ineffective and some systems that went horribly wrong. And he didn't find very many in his research that were working very well. So his conclusion was throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think it's, first of all, a poor conclusion. He said you're already paying your people to be safe. Why would you want to additionally bribe them to be safe? And part of his point was that all incentives, all rewards are basically a bribe over and above, the condition of employment part of this. And part of the answer to that is that you can, when you pay people to come do their job, you generally set a minimum standard for what you want them to do. And if they fall below that minimum standard, they're not in compliance, they're not giving you what you paid for. So typically you either coach, counsel, or fire and replace these people for doing that. Basic pay without any kind of incentive over and above can get you a level of compliance. It will very seldom get you a level of excellence. And what I find is that most people who are using reward and incentive programs are either horrible and trying to get decent, or they're excellent, or they're good and trying to get excellent. One of the two. They're trying to take their safety performance to a higher level, either from bad to good or from good to great. But they're trying to take it to a next level. And they realize that enforcement, compliance, oh, you're getting paid for this, so we expect you to do it, only goes a certain level. You know, generally you have to motivate people to excellence. You know, why does somebody want to be an Olympic athlete? Well, apparently it pays pretty well, you know, at least in endorsements and other things, you know. I mean, maybe your life's goal is to get your picture on the Wheaties box, you know. But whatever it is that's being given out there motivates people to a level of excellence that you just don't accomplish otherwise. You know, what if the Olympics were held in secret and nobody knew who won? You know, would you get the same level of participation? Would you get the same level of going out there? And that gold medal, you know, wouldn't you rather have $1 million or something like that? Well, some people would, but, you know, other people, that medal's almost more meaningful to them than just being paid for their performance. You know, we pay a lot of people for their performance. You see a football team, two football teams play on Sunday afternoon. They both get fabulously overpaid. You know, all of these professional athletes are, you know, have excelled through high school, through college, through the pros, and they're the best of the best that are out there. They're all getting high salaries. Why would one team come out there and really just reach for excellence, and another team kind of come out there and go through the motions? They're both getting fabulously paid. You know, but what's the incentive? Well, you think those guys couldn't afford to buy a ring as big as a Super Bowl ring, you know, out there? But one that you bought and one that you won are two different things. And this is where I think the value of incentive programs comes out. It's not that you got a prize and that prize is just fabulously valuable. It's what you did to get the prize. It's an incentive to excellent performance, not a reward for doing your job. And I think that's the difference in incentive programs and just expecting people, well, I paid you for this, so this is what I want.
Until next time, remember, in safety, prevention trumps reaction. For more information on safety culture excellence, or if you have a topic to suggest, please email us at podcast@proactsafety.com.